right, we are in Numbers 8. For Kate, just really quick. Numbers is structured around two censuses. Okay, so you have in chapter 1, you have the census of the old generation. And they're counted because they're still at Sinai and they're going to march towards Canaan, right, to conquer the land. So they're counted everybody 20 years and older, all the men. Okay, then in Numbers 26, you have the second census, and that's of the second generation. Okay, and they are the ones that are actually going to go into the land. Okay, so Numbers 1 is the first census, and theoretically, those people were supposed to go conquer the land, but, right, they complain and sin and rebel, and so God kills them all off, and so Numbers 26 is the counting of the people that are actually going to go into the land. So Numbers really is just about how that first census, all those people die in the wilderness. Okay, so, and we've talked about how Numbers keeps jumping all over the place. So if you remember, Exodus 40 is the first day of the first month of the second year when Moses erects the tabernacle, finishes setting up the tabernacle. And the glory of the Lord comes on the tabernacle and he can't enter. Okay, Leviticus then takes place within like a month. Or even not even, and Numbers keeps hopping back to that first day of the first month of the second year. And then on the 20th day of the second month of the second year, which hopefully we'll get today in chapter 10, they actually leave Sinai. Okay, so the end of Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers all take, well, the beginning of Numbers, all take place within 2 months. Really, a month and a half, the first month until the 20th of the second month. Okay, and then obviously the rest of Numbers is going to span the wandering of the 40 years, but that's just super high level. So in Numbers so far, we really have been focusing on the Levite, well, the census, right, the counting of the people, and then the Levites are not counted because they are going to serve God, and they are God is going to take them instead of all the firstborns. Okay, and today we're going to talk about the dedication of the Levites. Okay, it's also showing God breaks down the Levites. There are three clans, the Gershonites, the Merariites, and the Kohathites. Okay, they're just three clans within the tribe of Levi, and they all have different responsibilities. So the Kohathites, they're the ones that transport all the holy furniture. So the Ark of the Covenant, the table of showbread, the lampstand, all that. Chapter 4 is all of them. It's the duties of the Kohathites are first, then the duties of the Gershonites, and then the duties of the Merariites, however you say that name. Okay? Yeah.
Our pastor used to say, really? He would say those three, and you go, and the electric lights.
That's funny. So the Kohathites transported all the furniture. The Gershonites transported all the curtains. Okay. And then the Merariites, they transported all the poles and the frames and the sockets. I said the bones. And Terry Spontek, and I think Joyce were like, the bones from the sacrifices? No, the structure, the bones of the tabernacle, the structure of the tabernacle. Yeah. So then we talked about how God is showing that he is holy because the unclean, he told the unclean that they had to leave the camp. So anyone watching the camps of the Israelites would see a constant flux between this camp outside the camp and the camp itself. You know, as people become clean, they can come back into the camp. And as they become unclean for certain things, right, they would have to leave the camp. Okay. Yes. Yes.
It says, from creation in Genesis through Numbers.
Yes.
Which is 3,000 years.
Yes.
There's no mention of God's love in this book. Is that true?
In Numbers or in all, from Genesis on?
From Genesis up through Deuteronomy
30. I would not know that for a fact. I mean, no.
just technical word.
Well, but what about in when God shows up? Oh no, is that going to be? Now I'm getting confused. Yes, but it says that later on. I don't think it says that in the actual text, like in actual Genesis. That says that later on is referring back. Well, here it is. This is what I'm thinking of. So I don't know if what that, Exodus 34, when Moses asks God, right, show me yourself. And God says to him, the Lord God, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness and truth, who keeps loving kindness. So that's the word chesed in Hebrew. So I don't know. I don't know what that is referring to. I don't know that it ever says God loved Abraham or God loved Israel. I don't know if it says it like that, but that's at least what I thought of when you said that. So I'm not sure.
I mean, and then even in chapter 6 of Exodus, he's not technically saying he loved them, but he's saying, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery, and I will redeem you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of the language.
Right.
I mean, it shows love.
It shows love, but I don't know that it says God loved Israel.
Okay.
Like that straightforward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we are in Numbers 8. Okay, so if you remember, Numbers 7 was when every leader from all the tribes brought all those gifts for the tabernacle, when the tabernacle was set up, and one per day. So it took them 12 days from the first day of the first month to the 12th day of the first month. Okay? And then remember we talked about how finally, in verse 89 of chapter 7, Moses is now able to enter the tabernacle and hear from God, right? Because Exodus 40, the cloud comes down on the tabernacle and even Moses can't enter. But now that the sacrificial system has started, the priesthood has been instituted, the entire nation has brought their gifts to God, now Moses, there is a way now that Moses can enter and approach God.
Okay?
Then the first four verses we did last week of chapter 8, and we said, and this is the lampstand. It talks about the lampstand and that that Aaron was supposed to make sure that the lights shone forward, right, and shone on the table of showbread. So we talked about why in the world that's here, possibly because chapter 7 is all about the leaders of the tribes and what they did. Well, Aaron is the leader of his tribe, Levi, which is excluded because they're the priests and the Levites. And so this is what Aaron does to aid in worship. Okay, and we said the picture is that God's light and presence is shining on Israel because Israel is represented by the 12 loaves of bread that are on the table of showbread. Okay, so it's a visual, it's what God is doing to Israel in being there. It is visually portrayed in the tabernacle with the light shining on the table of showbread. Okay, so now we're going to finish chapter 8. Can someone read for me Numbers 8, 5 to 22?
Then present the Levites before the Lord, and have the Israelites lay their hands on them. Aaron is to present the Levites before the Lord as a presentation offering from the Israelites, so that they may perform the Lord's work. Next, the Levites are to lay their hands on the heads of the bulls. Sacrifice one as a sin offering, and the other as a burnt offering to the Lord, to make atonement for the Levites. You are to have the Levites stand before Aaron and his sons, and you are to present them before the Lord as a presentation offering. In this way you are to separate the Levites from the rest of the Israelites, so that the Levites will belong to me. After that, the Levites may come to serve at the tent of meeting, once you've ceremonially cleansed them and presented them as a presentation offering. For they've been exclusively assigned to me capitalized, from the Israelites. I have taken them for myself in place of all those who come first from the womb, every Israelite firstborn. For every firstborn among the Israelites is mine, both male and animal. I consecrate them myself on the day I struck down every firstborn in the land of Egypt. But I have taken the Levites in place of every firstborn among the Israelites. From the Israelites, I have given the Levites exclusively to Aaron and his sons to perform the work for the Israelites at the tent of meeting and to make atonement on their behalf so that no plague will come against the Israelites when they approach the sanctuary. You said 21?
22.
Moses, Aaron, and the entire Israelite community did this to the Levites. The Israelites did everything to them the Lord commanded Moses regarding the Levites. The Levites purified themselves and washed their clothes. Then Aaron presented them before the Lord as a presentation offering. Aaron also made atonement for them to ceremonially cleanse them. After that, the Levites came to do their work at the tent of meeting in the presence of Aaron and his sons. So they did to them as the Lord had commanded Moses concerning the Levites.
Okay, so this is the actual presentation, cleansing of the Levites, and presentation of them to the Lord, dedication of the Levites. Okay, so this is, again, continued preparation to leave Sinai. That's the beginning of Numbers. The first 10 chapters is they are preparing to leave, and these are all the things that they have to set in order before they can leave. So one of the things is the Levites need to be dedicated so that they are then able to carry the tabernacle, pack it up and carry it. Okay. Now this is a much simpler process than the ordination of the priests. Okay. When the priests were ordained, it took a whole week. When the Levites are dedicated, it took one day. Okay. So basically they just have to be cleansed and offered to the Lord, whereas the priests had to offer sacrifices for 8 days and be cleansed and do all this other stuff. Okay, so first, the Levites have to be cleansed, and that's, we can see that at the beginning, verse 6, 7. Okay, they were had to do three things. They had to be sprinkled with purifying water, or cleansing water. They had to shave, and they had to wash their clothes. Okay, purifying water, we're not exactly sure what this was. It could have been water from the laver. I mean, this is, hi, Helen. This is just like the water that the woman had to drink in the adultery test. We're not exactly sure where that water was from. So just like that, we're not sure where this water is from. It could have been from the laver. It could have been water that they used to purify those who touched the dead. We learn more about that in chapter 19. Okay, regardless, they knew what water they were supposed to use. Okay. Two, they had to be shaved. Shaving was a part of the ceremony for the cleansing of lepers. They had to be shaved once they were, if they were cleansed. And also the Nazarites, at the end of their vow, they would be shaved. Okay. And then washing of clothes. And washing of clothes is very common in how to become clean. Okay. If you had a skin disease, you had to wash your clothes. If you had a discharge, you had to wash your clothes. If you had touched a dead body, you had to wash your clothes. So that was a very common practice for becoming clean. So they had to do those three things. So there is a level of holiness that has to be maintained for those in service of the Lord. Okay, so their level of cleanliness, holiness, is not quite as great as the priests, but it is more than your average person usually have to usually had to do in order to become clean. Okay, so the Levites are between the priests and the common man. Okay. Verse 8 through 11, next, they had to make a sacrifice. Okay, so they have to offer a bull. Verse 8, then let them take a bull with its grain offering, fine flour mixed with oil, and a second bull you shall take for a sin offering. Okay, so they have one is a whole burnt offering. And that's going to be totally burned. And then one is going to be a sin offering. And they take a bull. They have to present a bull just like the priest did. Okay. And remember, if you remember back to sin offerings, back to the beginning of Leviticus. Okay. If the entire nation sinned, the sacrifice required was a bull. If a priest, the high priest sinned, the sacrifice required was a bull. Okay. And then for the ordination of the priest, because the bull is the most valuable. Okay, for the ordination of the priest, they offered a bull. And now for the dedication of the Levites, they're offering a bull as well. Okay. Verse 9, you shall present the Levites before the tent of meeting. You shall assemble the whole congregation of the sons of Israel and present the Levites before the Lord, and the sons of Israel shall lay their hands on the Levites. So it's like the Levites are the sacrifice. Okay, if you remember, with all the sacrifices, the animals you sacrificed before you killed them, you put your head on them. You put your head on them. You put your hand on their head. Right, because you were identifying with the animal. The animal was going to die in your place. Okay, so here we have all the Levites, and you gather all of Israel, and I imagine only the leaders, right, laid their hands on them or whatever, because it would have been impossible for everyone. Okay, but however they worked that out, the Levites are being offered to the Lord instead of Israel, because the Levites are going to stand in place of the firstborn. God is going to take the Levites instead of taking the firstborn son out of every family. Then, verse 11, Aaron thus shall then present the Levites before the Lord as a wave offering. Okay, a wave offering typically was they would take part of the food and wave it before the Lord, and then the priest could go eat it. Okay, so it was kind of symbolically offered to the Lord, but then the priest could eat it themselves. Obviously, God is against human sacrifice. Okay, so it's not like the Levites are being sacrificed. They are being sacrificed to the Lord, but obviously they're not going to get killed. So they are presented to God as a wave offering, and then they are going to stand in the stead of the firstborn. Okay. Then verse 12 to 14. It says, now the Levites shall lay their hands on the heads of the bulls. Okay, so we gathered the bulls in verse 8. They had them. And now, so the Levites are kind of being sacrificed on behalf of all of Israel's firstborns. And now the bulls are actually going to be sacrificed in place of the Levites. The burnt offering and the sin offering. Okay. And it says to make atonement for the Levites. So obviously you're first going to offer the sin offering, and then the whole burnt offering is next for consecration and total dedication to God. Okay. Then it seems like verse 13, they're offered as a wave offering again. Okay. You shall have the Levites stand before Aaron, now before Aaron and his sons. Okay, so before, it was before the whole congregation of Israel. Now it's specifically before Aaron and his sons, and they're presented as a wave offering to the Lord because God is giving the Levites specifically to Aaron and his sons to help them, to serve them in the tabernacle. Okay, so now the Levites belong wholly to God. Verse 14, thus you shall separate the Levites from among the sons of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. Then, after that, the Levites may go in and serve the tent of meeting, and you shall cleanse them and present them as a wave offering. For they are wholly given to me from among the sons of Israel. I have taken them for myself instead of every first issue of the womb, the firstborn of all the sons of Israel. Okay, so they were taken instead of the firstborn. And this goes all the way back to Exodus, Passover, when God spared Israel's firstborns while he killed all of Egypt's firstborn. And so after that, God said, all firstborn belong to me. So now he is taking the Levites instead. Okay. Verse 15, it says the Levites may go in and serve the tent of meeting. When it discussed what the Levites were responsible for, it only discussed transportation of the tabernacle, right? Tearing it down and moving it. It seems like even here they must have had more responsibilities. Remember, we only have three priests, right? There were five, two of them died. So all we have is Aaron, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Okay, that is a lot of work. You have 2.5 million, maybe more people. Okay, that is a lot of work for three guys to do. So very likely the Levites did all the physical work, you know, carting the stuff, the sack, what? Possibly. Yeah, remember we talked about who does the slaughtering in the Old Testament?
The person bringing
the sacrifice. Okay, so the priest. Now, once you get to the New Testament, it was the Levites that did that they would slaughter, okay? But in the Old Testament, the person bringing the sacrifice would do the slaughtering. But yeah, all the manual work of the washing and the cleansing and the carting the carcass out to the clean place and the, you know, bringing in the firewood to burn on the altar, standing guard duty, all those kind of things, most likely, okay? Any maintenance the Levites would have done. Okay, under the direction of Aaron and the priests. Aaron and the priests would have done all the things that you need to be holy to do, right? We know the Levites would never have entered the tabernacle itself, like the holy place. Certainly never the Holy of Holies, right? But out in the courtyard, they probably could have done a lot of the manual labor to help with, to help the priests, because at the beginning, there's only three of them. Okay, as time goes on, there would have been more and more, but at the beginning, there were only three. Yes.
Did I miss, do they ever tell you how many Levites there are at the beginning?
Yes. That is in, so there are two censuses of Levites, actually. And that is in chapters 3 and 4. So in chapter 3, they count all the Levites from a month old and upward.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because they are going to, a month old and upward are going to replace the firstborn. And there's 22,000 of them, it says verse 39. So that's 22,000 males.
Okay.
And then in chapter 4, they count all the males that are between ages of 30 and 50.
Did you say 24?
No, chapter 4.
Well, chapter 4.
Mm-hmm. They count all the, they count the Levites again, but this time only between the ages of 30 and 50, and they're the ones that can actually transport the tabernacle. They can do the work. Okay, and in verse 48, it's the total is 8,580. Okay, so that, so we talked about how there had to have been some sort of rotation or something, because obviously the tabernacle was not big enough to require 8,500 men to cart it. But for the Kohathites, right, so the Kohathites had to carry the furniture. Right, so they're actually walking, carrying the furniture. So they probably rotated, you know, who carried what, and you carry for an hour, and then whatever. The others, the Gershonites and the Merariites, they got to load their stuff onto carts, okay? And that you don't find out until chapter 7, when the leaders bring gifts, and they bring cart and oxen, and it says two carts and four oxen are given to the Gershonites, and four carts and eight oxen are given to the Merariites. Okay? Yeah, no problem. But they were also probably, the Gershonites and the Merariites were probably also in charge of maintenance of their items. So like if the curtains tore or ripped or faded or whatever, the Gershonites probably had to replace and sew and repair and do it, all that stuff too. And same with the poles and the sockets and the ropes and all that. Now, granted, it doesn't say that. So just know, the Bible doesn't explicitly say that. But, right. Okay. All right. Okay, verse 19 says, I have given the Levites, back to chapter 8, verse 19, I have given the Levites as a gift to Aaron and to his sons from among the sons of Israel to perform the service of the sons of Israel at the tent of meeting and to make atonement on behalf of the sons of Israel so that there will be no plague among the sons of Israel by their coming near to the sanctuary. So the Levites had to be dedicated to the Lord. They had to be wholly offered to the Lord so that they could come in and serve and not make the tabernacle unclean and not cause a plague to break out because they were unclean. Okay? So they have now been dedicated to God's work, to God's house, so they will not defile God's house. Okay? Verse 20 to 22. Moses and Aaron and all the congregation, what did they do? They obeyed according to all the Lord had commanded Moses. Okay, the Levites, they purified themselves and washed their clothes. Aaron made atonement for them by offering the sacrifices and cleansed them. Then after that, verse 22, the Levites went in to perform their service in the tent of meeting before Aaron and before his sons, just as the Lord had commanded Moses concerning the Levites, so they did to them. Okay, so we've said many times, the first 10 chapters, Israel does great. They obey, God commands, they do exactly what he tells them to do. Okay, how to camp, how to march, for the unclean to go outside the camp, you know, dedication of the Levites, all that kind of stuff. They do a great job, and they obey everything God has commanded. Questions? Okay. Numbers, can someone read Numbers 8, 23 to 26 for me?
Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is what applies to the Levites from 25 years old and upward. They shall enter to perform service in the work of the tent of meeting. But at the age of 50 years, they shall retire from service in the work and not work anymore. They may, however, assist their brothers in the tent of meeting to keep an obligation, but they themselves shall do no work. Thus you shall deal with the Levites concerning their obligations.
Okay, what, yes, okay, does anyone see a glaring problem with these verses? What about it?
You've got different numbers, it says 25.
That's right. Okay, so when they did the census, they counted you from 30 years old and up. Here it says 25 years old and up. Okay, so what? Why 25 here and 30 earlier? We don't exactly know. There's two possible theories. One is it was possible that you were allowed to start serving in the tabernacle at 25 and had like a five-year apprenticeship kind of thing, and then at 30 you were allowed to start transporting the tabernacle. Okay, so that's one possibility. Another possibility, which... well, I'll tell you why I don't like this one, but is that it was 25 originally, and then they counted them, and then there were too many of them, and so then they raised the age to 30. The problem is, it's God speaking. So God's not going to say, oh, 25, oh, oops, there's too many Levites, so now I'm going to change my mind and make it 30. So I don't really like that option either.
Wait, did you say?
That's what MacArthur says is the five-year apprenticeship. Yes.
Here they help with service.
Right.
Begin serving at 25 and carrying at 30.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, yes. So that's a possibility. But we don't, I mean, there are two different ages, so.
In both cases, the servant ended
at. Yes. Right. And so that is the same, where when you're carrying, you go 30 to 50, or in here it says 25 to 50.
And then, okay. David.
Oh, Mom, you steal all my thunder. I'm just kidding. Doesn't matter. Just kidding. No, it's fine. Let's go there. Mom, do you want to read 1 Chronicles 23, 24 to 32? David lowers it.
Below?
To 20. He lowers the age to 20. The service of the...
Good old David.
So if you go to 1 Chronicles 23,
24.
Can you read 24 to 32? Yeah.
These were the sons of Levi according to their father's household, even the heads of the father's households of those of them who were counted in the number of names by their census, doing the work for the service of the house of the Lord, from 20 years old and upward. For David said, the Lord God of Israel has given rest to his people, and he dwells in Jerusalem forever. Also the Levites will no longer need to carry the tabernacle and all the utensils for the service. For by the last words of David, the sons of Levi were numbered from 20 years old and upward. For their office is to assist the sons of Aaron with the service of the house of the Lord in the courts, in the chambers, and in the purifying of all holy things, even the work of the service of the house of God, and with the showbread and the fine flour for a grain offering and unleavened wafers for what is baked in the pan or what is well mixed, and all measures of volume and size. They are to stand every morning to thank and to praise the Lord, and likewise at evening, and to offer all burnt offerings to the Lord on the Sabbaths, the new moons, and the fixed festivals in the number set by the ordinance concerning them continually before the Lord. Thus they are to keep charge of the tent of meeting, and charge of the holy place, and charge of the sons of Aaron, their relatives, for the service of the house.
Okay, so once they no longer have to move the tabernacle around, right? David did not build the temple, but he moves the tabernacle to Jerusalem, and Solomon's going to build the temple. Okay, so there's no more wandering of the tabernacle. He lowers the age of the Levites to 20, and we see what they do, right? They're the ones that are baking the bread and making all the grain offerings, and they're the choir. They're singing in the morning and in the evening, and they're doing purifying things, making them holy. So they're doing all the grunt work of the temple. And so once the tabernacle no longer has to wander, then David lowers the age to 20. First Chronicles 23, verses 24 to 32.
Also, Ezra 3:8 talks about it also.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Okay, but regardless of the age they started, at 50 they were to retire. Pretty nice retirement age, huh?
Maybe that's where we get it.
Retirement age? Okay, so, but it says, if you look back in Numbers 9, verse 25, but at the age of 50, they shall retire from service in the work and not work anymore. They may, however, assist their brothers in the tent of meeting to keep an obligation, but they themselves shall do no work. Both the commentaries I said this referred to heavy work, like the dismantling of the tabernacle and the transporting of it and the really heavy, hard manual labor. Okay. So they were still allowed to assist. Both my commentaries said that this meant guard duty. How, I don't know how that means guard duty, but they both said it. So, but regardless, maybe they could stand guard duty at night, or, you know, maybe they could still help out in the sacrifices and whatever. They were just to not do the heavy manual work anymore. I guess they were getting too old, which is funny because Moses lived to be 120. So, I mean, and it says when he died, he was just as fit as he had ever been in his life. So, but obviously that was God. But I mean, he didn't even lead the Exodus till he was 80. So, questions? Chapter 8. All right. Chapter 9. We get Passover. Can someone read for me chapter 9, verses 1 to 14?
And the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, "Let the people of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time. On the 14th day of this month at twilight, you shall keep it at its appointed time according to all its statutes and all its rules you shall keep it." So Moses told the people of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord had commanded Moses, so the people of Israel did. And there were certain men who were unclean through touching a dead body. So they could not keep the Passover on that day. And they came before Moses and Aaron on that day. And those men said to him, "We are unclean through touching a dead body. Why are we kept from bringing the Lord's offering at its appointed time among the people of Israel?" And Moses said to them, "Wait, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you." The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel, saying, 'If any one of you or of your descendants is unclean through touching a dead body or is on a long journey, he shall still keep the Passover to the Lord. In the second month, on the 14th day at twilight, they shall keep it. They shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They shall leave none of it until the morning, nor break any of its bones. According to all the statute of the Passover, they shall keep it. But if anyone who is clean and is not on a journey fails to keep the Passover, that person shall be cut off from his people, because he did not bring the Lord's offering at its appointed time. That man shall bear his sin. And if a stranger sojourns among you and would keep the Passover to the Lord according to the statute of the Passover and according to its rule, so shall he do. You shall have one statute, both for the sojourner and for the native."
Okay. So, beginning of the chapter, right? They're still in the wilderness. God speaks again. They're in the first month of the second year, and it's time for Passover, right? Passover was supposed to be celebrated on the 14th day of the first month of every year. Okay. Exodus 12, 1 to 20 were details on how Passover and unleavened bread were to be celebrated. If we remember our distinction, Passover was one meal that you ate on the evening of the 14th. Okay? Unleavened bread, you then celebrated for a week after. It was a week-long celebration. Okay? So there is a distinction between Passover and unleavened bread feast. Okay? So God commands Israel to celebrate. Verse 3, you shall observe it at its appointed time. You shall observe it according to all its statutes and according to all its ordinances. God gave that all in Exodus, how they were to celebrate Passover. And like Marion said last week or week before, can't remember, but this would have been their first Passover celebration where they were not actually fleeing or painting their doors because God was going to come and kill them. Okay. So this would have been their first celebration without, you know, the threat of imminent death hanging over their heads. Okay. God had delivered them from Egypt. They had seen all his miracles of the 10 plagues, of Passover, of parting the Red Sea, of manna in the wilderness, right? And this would have been their first celebration. Okay. Passover was the time to remember in every generation the wondrous salvation work of God in the Exodus. Okay, God had set this time so that every year all of Israel was to remember the Exodus. When we were studying Exodus, remember we said the Exodus becomes God's signature move. He is saving his people, delivering his people from bondage. In the Exodus, he did it physically. Through Christ, he did it spiritually. Right, so the Exodus is a picture of what Messiah is going to accomplish. So this becomes God's signature move, and every year Israel was to remember. And they were to use Passover especially to teach their children what God was like and what he had done for Israel. Okay. So it's not a bad thing if we celebrate Passover either. And we do with Easter, because Easter is always around Passover time. But it is good to stop and remember and teach our children about God's saving, redemptive work. Okay? One thing one of the commentators said is, they don't have doors, right? They're in the wilderness. So possibly they put the blood on their tent flaps or something. I'm sure they still did that, because that's what God commanded. You're supposed to put the blood on your door frames, right? Well, they don't have door frames, so they got to figure out something. So maybe it was put on their tent flaps. We're not sure exactly what they did. But we do know that they obeyed. Okay, verse 3, 14th day of the month at twilight. This word twilight literally means just between two evenings. Okay, so what exactly does that mean, right?
I think traditionally they start around 7.
Well, Jewish tradition said that this meant between noon and sunset. Was twilight. And in the New Testament times, they began slaughtering the Passover lambs at 3 p.m. Okay. There's debate over when Passover was really celebrated, but yes. Right. Okay, so Moses told all of Israel to observe the Passover. Verse 5, they observed the Passover in the first month on the 14th day of the month at twilight in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord had commanded Moses. So Israel's great. They obey. They do exactly what God says. They figured out what to do with the blood because they obeyed everything. Okay, so they are doing great and they obey what God says to do. Then we have a problem, right? Verse 6, but there were some men who were unclean because of the dead person. Okay? In Leviticus 23, verse 4 through 8, it calls Passover a holy convocation. Okay? A holy celebration. So that implies that you have to be clean. And obviously, to offer sacrifice, you have to be clean. Okay? You cannot enter tabernacle without being clean. Okay, so there is nowhere where it explicitly says in order to celebrate Passover, you have to be clean. However, it is implied that you have to be clean. So some could not celebrate because they were unclean. And remember, this is the very first celebration of Passover outside of actually fleeing Egypt. Okay, so it was probably a really big deal. And those who were unclean were probably super disappointed that they couldn't participate and they could not be part of this nationwide celebration. Okay. Here it says specifically they were unclean because of a dead person. So somebody in their family had died. They were still in that 1 week of uncleanness. Okay. And they thought it was a big bummer that they couldn't celebrate. So they come to Moses and they say, verse 7, though we are unclean because of the dead person, why are we restrained from presenting the offering of the Lord at its appointed time among the sons of Israel? Okay. So they want to celebrate too. So they ask Moses, and Moses does the wise thing. He asks the Lord, right? He says, wait, and I will listen to what the Lord will command. Okay, so he takes it before the Lord. So then God offers a solution. Verse 9, he says, if you are unclean because of a dead person, or if you're on a distant journey and you can't celebrate, okay, you may observe the Passover to the Lord in the second month on the 14th day. So it's presuming by that point you are clean, right? If you're unclean from a dead person, you're only unclean for a week. So however that week fell, right, the 14th fell in that week, by the second month, the 14th day, you should be clean. Okay? So you can celebrate it then. God also adds a warning here. He says, verse 13, but the man who is clean and is not on a journey and yet neglects to observe the Passover, that person shall be cut off from his people. So he said, just because I give you a second option, that doesn't mean that you have the option of just not celebrating. Okay, if you are clean and you are able and you do not celebrate, then you will be cut off. And cut off, remember, is the threat of God is going to deal with you. God is going to possibly kill you at any time and you don't know when, okay, because you have done something that is worthy of death. Okay, God also adds at the end, verse 14, if an alien sojourns among you and observes the Passover to the Lord according to the statute of the Passover, according to its ordinance, so he shall do. You shall have one statute both for the alien and for the native of the land. So an alien could celebrate Passover as well, but they had to meet the requirements. And Exodus 12, 43 to 49 lists requirements to celebrate Passover. One of them was you had to be circumcised. Okay, so this is not just any foreigner in your midst, okay, can celebrate Passover. This is somebody who's probably made Israel their home and probably is on their way to becoming a Jew themselves. Okay.
In regard to killing the lamb.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So that was Kyle's whole sermon. If you remember, the whole timeline is they had a disagreement of exactly when Passover should be celebrated. Right? Because Jesus celebrates Passover the night before he dies. Mm-hmm. But because there is disagreement, some celebrated the night before he dies and some would have celebrated the night that Jesus on Friday, right? Jesus died on Friday. So Jesus celebrates Passover on Thursday. Some Jews would celebrate Passover on Friday. So there were actually 2 days that the Passover lamb was slaughtered. So Passover, some of them would, for those who celebrated on Thursday, they would have been slaughtered at 3 p.m. that. And then those who celebrated on Friday, they would have been slaughtered at 3 p.m. that day. But yes, Jesus is dying as the Passover lambs are being slaughtered. Yep. Okay. Notice that, well, it doesn't explicitly say it, but the week-long celebration of unleavened bread is not, quote-unquote, made up. Okay, and the reason we know that is because they're allowed to celebrate the second, right, Passover on the 14th day, and then on the 20th day they leave. We find that out in chapter 10, and so there's not enough time. There's not 7 days. Okay, there's 6 days only there. So you couldn't have celebrated the week-long Feast of Unleavened Bread after that to make it up. So if you missed Passover because you're unclean, then you missed unleavened bread altogether, but you could make up Passover on the second month. Okay? Hezekiah actually does this. If we go to 2 Chronicles, can someone read for me 2 Chronicles 30, verse 1 through 3? It's really 1 to 27, but we only need to read 1 through 3. 2 Chronicles 30, 1 through 3.
Israel and Judah and wrote letters also to Ephraim and Manasseh that
they should come to the house of the Lord at Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover to the Lord God of Israel. The king and his princes and all the assembly in Jerusalem had decided to celebrate the Passover in the second month, since they could not celebrate it at that time because the priests had not consecrated themselves in sufficient numbers, nor had the people been gathered to Jerusalem.
Okay, so Hezekiah, if you remember, okay, this is divided kingdom, Judah in the south, Israel in the north. Okay, but Hezekiah is king in Judah, but he sends letters all the way up to Ephraim and Manasseh up in Israel. So he is saying, let us all celebrate Passover together. Okay, so he is inviting all of Israel to come, not just Judah, to come and celebrate Passover. But there's a problem. Passover hadn't been celebrated in forever, and they're all unclean. Even the priests are unclean, right? They haven't consecrated themselves. So by the time they figure this all out, it's too late to celebrate the first month, 14th day, because there are not enough priests that are consecrated to do it then. And there hasn't been time for all of Israel to gather to get the news that Hezekiah is going to celebrate Passover at the temple. Please come. Okay. So he celebrates on the second month, on the 14th day, because they are unclean. So now we're going to do it again. Okay. There is a corollary in the New Testament to this. Can someone read for me 1 Corinthians 11, 27 to 30? 1 Corinthians 11, 27 to 30. Okay, so this is talking about communion, right? Communion was instituted at Passover, right? That's when Jesus says, this is my blood, this is my body, okay? And so just like in the Old Testament, if you failed to celebrate Passover or if you ate Passover in an unworthy way, right, you were going to be cut off. God was going to judge you. Well, we see that same thing here in the New Testament. They are eating communion, taking communion in an unworthy manner. And it says, for this reason, many of you are weak and sick and a number sleep. That means dead. God's killed them because they're taking communion in the wrong way. So they're either sick through judgment or they're dead through judgment. Okay, so God is the same. The God of the Old Testament is the same as the God of the New Testament. He has not changed. He is still holy God and he will be treated as holy. Questions? All right, can someone read for me Numbers 9, 15 to 23?
Now on the day that the tabernacle was erected, the cloud covered the tabernacle, the tent of the testimony, and in the evening, it was like the appearance of fire over the tabernacle until morning. So it was continuously. The cloud would cover it by day and the appearance of fire by night. Wherever the cloud was lifted from over the tent, and afterward the sons of Israel would then set out, and in the place where the cloud settled down, there the sons of Israel would camp. At the command of the Lord, the sons of Israel would set out, and at the command of the Lord, they would camp as long as the cloud settled over the tabernacle, and they remained camped. Even when the cloud lingered over the tabernacle for many days, the sons of Israel would keep the Lord's charge and not set out. If sometimes the cloud remained a few days over the tabernacle, according to the command of the Lord, they remained camped. Then according to the command of the Lord, they set out. If sometimes the cloud remained from evening until morning, when the cloud was lifted in the morning, they would move out, or if it remained in the daytime and at night, whenever the cloud was lifted, they would set out. Whether it was 2 days a month or a year that the cloud lingered over the tabernacle, staying above it, the sons of Israel remained camped and did not set out. But when it was lifted, they did set out. At the command of the Lord, they camped, and at the command of the Lord, they set out. They kept the Lord's charge according to the command of the Lord through Moses.
Okay.
Really wants us to know.
It's important.
Would get
for the writing.
It's redundant.
Oh, careful, careful what you say. You speak blasphemy. I'm just kidding.
I know. It's like, I mean, I kept thinking I'm reading the same verse over.
Okay. Yes, it is very, very repetitive. Okay. There is a rhythm to this section, and so they possibly think that this was might have been an early song of praise. I mean, because it is so repetitive and it is redundant, and there is kind of a rhythm flow to it. So they think that it might have been.
Oh, the song of the journey.
Yes.
Can you imagine having to take down the tabernacle and all the poles and everything, stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
One day and the next day you have to do it all over again?
That's why there's 8,000 of them. What'd you say?
You got really good at your job.
Yeah, you did. Yes, you did.
like camping in a tent?
Yeah.
Or whatever you got. You figured out really quickly.
Yeah. Okay, so they think that possibly, like, even verse 18, the second half, verse 20 and verse 23, kind of sounds like a refrain. Verse 18, at the command of the Lord, the sons of the Lord would set out. The sons of Israel would set out. At the command of the Lord, they would camp. End of verse 20. According to the command of the Lord, they remained camped. Then according to the command of the Lord, they set out. Verse 23, at the command of the Lord, they camped. At the command of the Lord, they set out. They kept, so it's a repeating over and over again. So it seems like a refrain. But this section tells us their method of travel. This is to the promised land and then also in their 40-year wandering, right? Because it says, where is it? Oh, verse 22, whether it was 2 days or a month or a year, right? So that's going to refer to their wandering in the wilderness because it did not take them a year to get from Sinai to Canaan the first time, right? Before they send in the spies and then they reject the Lord. Okay, so this is referring to how they marched through the wilderness to Canaan, but also then the 40 years of wandering as well. Okay, and it emphasizes the theme of God's leadership. Okay, they did exactly, even in their rebellion of their 40 years, they still had to follow the Lord, and they did not move unless the cloud moved, and when the cloud stopped, they stopped. Right, and I think it even said, right, if the cloud sets out at night, then they set out at night. You know, whatever it is that God's doing, they do.
At least it was the fire at night, so it was easier to see.
Yes, yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. But again, even this song, if that's what this is, right, there's an atmosphere of celebration. Okay. And the verse 23, they kept the Lord's charge according to the command of the Lord through Moses. Because Israel is still in obedience and in communion with holy God, there is an atmosphere of celebration that whatever God does, wherever the cloud moves, that's where they're going to go. That's where they're going to follow. Yep.
The New Testament also puts God's presence in the imagery of the clouds and the transfiguration of Jesus and his ascension.
Wow.
All right, questions. Chapter 9. This is the Holman. That's the Holman. Should email MacArthur, say he failed there. Any questions? Numbers 9.
Yeah. They couldn't get it wrong,
But they did. They've done it. They've done a great job.
I mean, that's 9 whole chapters.
Hold on. We just need to go through 10, and chapter 11 might tell us complaints.
Right, and know that from the beginning of Numbers till the end of chapter 10 is a month and a half. But if you remember in Exodus, when they are building the tabernacle, right, That, if we remember when we discussed it, that was the best this generation ever did. Because they were fully involved. They were giving sacrificially to the Lord. They were joyful. And do you remember what we said when they set up the tabernacle? They built themselves out, right? They start in the Holy of Holies and they build themselves out to where they are built out from the presence of God, right? So even Israel at her best, right, is still estranged from God. Why? Because we still have a sin problem. And that's why we have to have Leviticus, because there has to be a solution to the sin problem. There has to be sacrifice. There has to be shedding of blood. There has to be justice. Okay. And so then we get Numbers, and the first part of Numbers, right, is from that day of setting up the tabernacle till they move out. That's a month and a half, and they're doing, Israel's doing great. But it does not take them very long on the road for things to fall apart. Okay? Numbers 10. Can someone read from? Oh, yeah.
When they were leaving Egypt, it didn't take them very long.
Nope.
They had escaped, but they were complaining.
Exactly. Right. Yep. Numbers 10, verses 1 through 10. Can someone read that for me?
The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Make two silver trumpets of hammered work. You shall make them. And you shall use them for summoning the congregation and for breaking camp. And when both are blown, all the congregation shall gather themselves to you at the entrance of the tent of meeting. But if they blow only one, then the chiefs, the heads of the tribes of Israel shall gather themselves to you. When you blow an alarm, the camps that are on the east side shall set out. And when you blow an alarm the second time, the camps are on the south side shall set out. An alarm is to be blown whenever they are to set out. But when the assembly is to be gathered together, you shall blow a long blast, but you shall not sound an alarm. And the sons of Aaron and the priests shall blow the trumpets. The trumpets shall be to you for a perpetual statute throughout your generations. And when you go to war in your land against the adversary who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, that you may be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. And on the day of your gladness also, and at the appointed feasts, and at the beginnings of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings. They shall be a reminder of you before your God. I am the Lord your God."
Okay, so this is the last step in preparation for their journey. The last thing they need. Okay, because verse 11, they're going to leave. All right? So the last thing they need, two silver trumpets. These were to coordinate the march through the wilderness. Okay? There were so many people that there had to be some method so that they would all move together or move out when they were supposed to move out, okay? Otherwise, it would be chaos, and obviously we can't have that because God is a holy God and he is a God of order. So we have two trumpets. So the trumpets were used to call assembly or to announce the departure of the camps. Okay, it says you shall use them, verse 2, summoning the congregation and having the camp set out. Okay, so that's what they're used for. These are different than a ram's horn. Okay, these are two pipes that would, silver narrow pipes that would have had a flare at the end. Okay.
But kind of more like the medieval trumpet.
Yes, yes, not like our kind of trumpet today, but yes. It's possible that they were different lengths, so that they would have different, they would produce different tones so that when they were sounded together, you could tell that two were being blown and not one, or they could just play different notes and then you would hear that two were being blown and not one. So, yeah. Okay, the short blasts were the alarm to break up camps and march, okay? So it says, verse 5, when you blow an alarm, the camps that are pitched. So according to tradition, these are short blasts. Long blasts were for the calling of the assembly. Verse 7, when convening the assembly, however, you shall blow without sounding an alarm. Okay, later rabbis, because the Jews like to do this kind of thing, defined the long blast as three times the length of the short blast. Okay, because you got to have it defined. Exactly. Okay, but that's what the rabbis said. So do we exactly know what those sounded like here? No, but the people obviously did. Okay. So each camp would set out when their alarm was blown. Okay, so the first time it would be Judah and his three tribes, you know, and everybody would know when it was their turn and what blast was blown so that they would know when to leave. Verse 8, the priestly sons of Aaron, moreover, shall blow the trumpets. Okay, so it's the priests that are in charge. They are the ones that are going to announce the departure of the camp, which makes sense because they're to leave when the cloud leaves the tabernacle. Okay, who's going to know that best? It's going to be the priests. Okay. And this section, verses 8 through 10, looks forward to when Israel is in the land, right? Because verse 9 says, when you go to war in your land against the adversary who attacks you. Okay, so they are to blow the trumpet in battle. And it says that you may be remembered before the Lord your God and be saved from your enemies.
You know what the blast for the alarm was?
No, the commentator just said it was a short blast. I mean, and that's what the rabbis would have thought too, because they said the long blast was three times the short blast. So we don't know what it sounded like, but they would have known and they would have been able to hear the difference. Yeah. Okay. So the trumpet were blown in battle to request God's help. It was a prayer. It was kind of like a prayer to remind the soldiers that God remembers and delivers his people. Okay, that God was fighting for them, especially when they were conquering Canaan, right? Because that's what God told them to do. So the soldiers would remember that God is the one that commanded this war, and God will help us and we will prevail.
So this makes more sense for Jericho.
Yes. Yeah. The trumpets are blown, and what does God do? He makes the walls fall down, right? And God fights the battle.
Technically, the song is wrong. Joshua did not fight the battle. Joshua obeyed.
Joshua marched in circles is what he did. And God beat the Canaanites. Yes.
So it's only two trumpets.
Yes.
Do they have more trumpets at Jericho?
Well, that is a very good question. I don't know.
For some reason in my head, I have seven stuck in my head, but...
But the ram's horn is, it says, seven priests shall carry seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. Then, so that's different. Then on the seventh day, you shall march around the city seven times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. It shall be that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people. So there it sounds like they were blowing ram's horns, not these specific ones. But, I mean, the idea is still the same. Good question. And you were right, seven.
I don't know. It was
Yep.
7-day period.
Yes. Once every day and then seven. Yep.
Yeah.
And seven on the last day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The number of completion.
That's right.
I didn't learn that in Sunday school. I just learned they went around seven times.
Oh.
They never told me about the other.
All right. So also it says verse 10, also in the day of your gladness and in your appointed feasts and on the first days of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, and they shall be as a reminder of you before your God. Okay, so it was to be in celebration as well. So during their feasts, Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles, etc., and also on the first day of their month, they were to blow the trumpet while they were doing sacrifices. It would have been celebration. Okay. It ends with, I am the Lord your God, or I am Yahweh your God. Okay, so Yahweh is totally sovereign. He is the one that is dictating exactly how they are to march, exactly how they are to camp, when they are to leave, everything they are to do, right? Israel was supposed to be a reflection of sovereign God to the nations, of holy God to the nations. And so God cares about every single thing they do. Okay.
I think think it can sometimes be easy for me in our culture where we don't have this God who's right there,
right.
You know, leading, to feel like, is God sovereign over all of it? But I think when you go through this and you see the detail he puts
right.
out, he is. He
right.
is sovereign over every single little bit of it. And we just have to remind ourselves of that
right.
because we don't have the physical, you know, whatever.
Right.
In front of us, and by faith, we remind ourselves, no, he is sovereign over all of the
right.
details. And,
yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and we have to remember, God has not changed. So this God that is concerned that they have a way to march and two specific silver trumpets, right, so that they leave in an orderly manner, he is the same God that we have today. Yeah, very good. All right, the coming of Christ will also be announced with the trumpet. We'll just go one. Can someone read Matthew 24, 29 to 31? Matthew 24, 29 to 31.
But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened. Wait.
Yes?
Yes. And the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken, and then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory, and he will send forth his angel with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other.
Okay, so that says a great trumpet, and then also maybe the more familiar one is 1 Corinthians 15, 51 to 52. Which says a trumpet will sound, and in the blinking of an eye at the last moment. That passage, do we know that passage? That's 1 Corinthians 15, 51 to 52. All right, questions? Numbers 10, 1 to 10. 15, 51 to 52. Yeah. All right. So back in Numbers 10, can someone read for me verses 11 to 36?
Now, in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th of the month, the cloud was lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony, and the sons of Israel set out on their journeys from the wilderness of Sinai. Then the cloud settled down in the wilderness of Paran. So they moved out for the first time according to the commandment of the Lord through Moses. The standard of the camp of the sons of Judah, according to their army, set out first with Nashon, the son of Amminadab, over its army. And Nathanael, the son of Zuar, over the tribal army of the sons of Issachar. And Eliab, the son of Helon, over the tribal army of the sons of Zebulun. Then the tabernacle was taken down, and the sons of Gershon and the sons of Merari, who were carrying the tabernacle, set out. Next, the standard of the camp of Reuben set out according to their armies, set out with Eliezer, the son of Shedeur, over the army, and Shelumiel, the sons of Jurashaddai, over the tribal army of the sons of Simeon, and Eliasaph, the sons of Duel, was over the tribal army of the sons of Gad. Then the Kohathites set out carrying the holy objects, and the tabernacle was set up before their arrival. Next, the standard of the camp of the sons of Ephraim, according to their armies, was set out with Elishama, the son of Amminahud, over its army, and Gamaliel, the son of Pedahazer, over the tribal army of the sons of Manasseh, and Abidan, the son of Gideoni, over the tribal army of the sons of Benjamin. Then the standard of the camp of the sons of Dan, according to their armies, which formed the rear guard for all the camps, set out with Ahiazar, the son of Amishadai, over its army, and Pagiel, the sons of Ochran, over the tribal army of the sons of Asher, and Ahira, the sons of Enan, over the tribal army of the sons of Naphtali. This was the order of the march of the sons of Israel by their armies as they set out. Then Moses said to Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, "We are setting out to the place of which the Lord said, I will give it to you. Come with us, and we will do you good, for the Lord has promised good concerning Israel."
Abigail.
But he said to him, I will not come, but rather will go to my own land and relatives. Then he said, please do not leave us, inasmuch as you know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you will be as eyes for us. So it will be if you go with us, that whatever good the Lord does for us, we will do for you. Thus they set out from the mount of the Lord, 3 days' journey, with the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord journeying in front of them for the 3 days to seek out a resting place for them. The cloud of the Lord was over them by day, and when they set out from the camp, then it came about when the ark set out that Moses said, rise up, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you. When it came to rest, he said, return, O Lord, to the myriad thousands of Israel.
Okay, so, yeah, you did. All right, so after 11 months at Sinai, Israel finally leaves, okay? And this starts part two of Numbers. This goes from the second half of chapter 10 all the way through chapter 25. The title of this section is The Rebellious Generation in the Wilderness. Because this is as good as it's going to get. This is the best part, is the second half of chapter 10. Okay, so they physically move from Sinai to the wilderness of Paran, okay? But what's ironic is that they are also going to spiritually move away from God. Okay, so they're leaving Sinai, headed towards Canaan, but they're also spiritually leaving God. Okay, so this rebellious section starts out great. It starts out with Israel still in obedience. Okay, Abigail. It sets out with Israel still in obedience and marching just as God has commanded them. And God is going to lead them with the cloud. Okay? So it says in verse 12 that then the cloud settled down in the wilderness of Paran. Makes it sound like it was all quick, simple, and easy. Okay? But they're going to make three recorded stops before they get there. Okay? And in each of those three stops, something bad happens, okay? So Taberah is their first stop, and that's in chapter 11, verse 3. Then Kibrot Hataava, which is in chapter 11, verse 34 and 35. And then Hazarot, which is in chapter 12, verse 16. Okay, and then in chapter 12, verse 16, it says, then they will arrive in the wilderness of Paran. Okay, so it's not just, you know, a straight shot and they're done. They have three recorded stops in between. Okay. The wilderness of Paran, we're not exactly sure the borders, but it would have covered northern Sinai and the southern Negev. And the Negev is the south part of Israel, modern day Israel today. Okay. So verse 14 through 28, this lists the order in which they march. Okay, and this is the order that God told them to march in earlier. So first Judah and so remember, there are three tribes that are camped on each side of the tabernacle. And the way they march is the east side goes first, then the south, then the west, then the north. Okay, so Judah leads this side that is on the east. So that's Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. And then here it tells us that after those three tribes, then two of the clans of Levi march, the Gershonites and the Merariites, right? So the people who take care of the curtains and the poles, they're going to go next. And verse 21 tells us why. It's so that when the Kohathites get there with all the furniture, the tabernacle can already be set up. So the furniture can just move right in. Okay? So the first three tribes and then the curtains and the poles go with the Gershonite and Merarites. Then you get Reuben, Simeon, and Gad. Okay, those are the next three tribes. So then in the middle are the Kohathites with the furniture. And then after them are the last six, which is Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin, and then Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. Okay, but as you can see, God thought of everything, right? Even down to when the Gershonites need to go out. Okay, so Israel moves out in unity and harmony and obedience to God. Then in verse 29 to 32, we get Moses asking Hobab to go with them. Okay, Hobab is as far as we can tell, Moses' brother-in-law. And if you remember, Reuel, or Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, had given Moses very good advice. If you remember, he had asked, Moses was trying to do all the work of judging, and he had no time, right? Because he was just trying to settle disputes all over the place. And so it is his father-in-law that said, appoint under judges, right? And only the most important cases come to you. So appoint men who can make the smaller decision over, I think it was people of 10 and 100, and I can't remember how. But it was a structure so that Moses would then only address the most important problem. So that was his father-in-law's idea, okay? So Moses asks him to go with him for his knowledge of the, and to use his knowledge of the wilderness. Because he says, verse 31, please do not leave us inasmuch as you know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you will be as eyes for us. So God is still leading them, right, and telling them where to go. But Hobab had very good knowledge of that area, and so would have been very useful to have. Okay?
Doesn't it sound like he's not trusting God to take them where they should go?
Yeah, no, I mean, it kind of sounds like that, but I don't think that's the intent. Mm-hmm. I think this is more the practicalness of, we're going to be in the wilderness, and you know this place, and so it's good to have someone along that knows what they're doing or where they're going. No, yes, God is still going to lead them, and God is still going to tell them where to go, but I guess he thought it would be a good idea to have Hobab along as well. It doesn't say explicitly that Hobab agrees, but it sounds that way, that he does agree. Okay? Hobab, if you remember, is a Midianite. Moses' wife was a Midianite. Okay? So he is a Midianite, and he's helping Israel. But in Numbers 25, verse 6, that does not mean all Midianites are good. Okay? In Numbers 25, verse 6, it is a Midianite woman that helps lead Israel astray and into idolatry. Okay, and that's where you get, I believe, Eleazar, who runs them through with a spear. I think that's that. Yes. So not all Midianites were good. Okay. Verse 33-36, it says, thus they set out from the mount of the Lord 3 days' journey with the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, journeying in front of them for the 3 days. So here it sounds like the Ark goes from the middle of the camp to the very front of the camp, even in front of Judah. Okay? So God is leading with the cloud. The Ark of the Covenant, which also represents God, is at the very front. And then you have the rest of the furniture in the middle. Okay? So this is 13 months after the Exodus. Israel is on the march to Canaan. And Moses is excited. Okay? Because he has this... these things that he says, right? When the ark sets out, he says, rise up, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you. When it comes to rest, he says, return, O Lord, to the myriad thousands of Israel. Okay? So Moses is excited that Israel is on the march to Canaan, and he's showing his faith in God, that it is God that is going to scatter his enemies. God is going to make the people flee, right? And God is the one that has raised up this myriad thousands of Israel. These are his people. Okay, Israel is marching to holy war. So it is very ironic because it is the next verse where things turn south. Okay, so Moses has great faith, and he is excited. And it seems like everything should be hopeful. Israel has done a great job these first 10 chapters. Everything that's recorded is they obey, they obey, they obey. They do just as the Lord commanded them. Okay? And now that they're on the move and in the wilderness again, okay, Israel's going to struggle. And they're not going to obey. And if you remember, I think we talked about this before, for the rest of the Bible, the wilderness is a place of testing, okay? And because Moses was in the wilderness 40 years, from the age of 40 to 80, when he fled to Midian, okay? Why? Because Israel was going to be in the wilderness 40 years, right? David spends many years in the wilderness, right? And then that, this is why Jesus had to be tempted in the wilderness, because Israel fails in the wilderness. David fails in the wilderness. So Jesus has to succeed in the wilderness, okay? In the place of testing, Jesus has to succeed. Okay, so Israel's headed back into the wilderness where they are going to fail. Chapter 10, questions.
What chapter did you say the rebelliousness continued? You started at 11, was it 25?
Oh, yeah, through 25. Because then chapter 26 is the census of the second generation. Yep. Any other questions?
We're on the move.
We are on the move. Three chapters in one day. All right, let me pray and we'll be done. Dear Jesus, we thank you for your word. Lord, we do thank you that you succeeded in the wilderness, that you resisted all temptation. And you did not even make bread when you were hungry. So we thank you that you are the fulfillment of everything that came before. You are the seed that was long looked for from Genesis. And Lord, we thank you that we live after the cross, where we can look back to see the full, your full redemptive history, the plan that you had from the beginning. And Lord, we long for the day when you will come again and make everything right, especially in our world as things get darker and darker, and who knows what's going to happen next. Lord, we long for the day when Messiah will reign on this earth and set all things right. Thank you that we can place our hope in you, that we do not hope in our circumstances or hope in the government or anything, Lord, but our hope is in the salvation, your death and resurrection on the cross. And we know that one day you will reign. We love you, Lord Jesus. Amen.